All right, we are back. Joining me is, again, Steve Valentino. That was interesting talk about the Democratic Convention. And wouldn't it be great if you get Bob Mulholland?
You've mentioned that a couple times, and I think we'll try and use all the pull that we have here at Radio Parallax to get him on the show.
Very good, sir. Now, we mentioned on last week's program, I wanted to delve into a soldier's viewpoint on surviving nuclear, chemical, and biological attacks from Sergeant First Class Red Thomas, an email sent to me by Roger Peterson. That's worth going over at some length as regards to the ongoing, and this, you know, regardless of what happens in Iraq, the ongoing situation about people being worried about possible nuclear, chemical, or biological attack. But I want to do this properly, and I don't think we have time to do it today. So I'm going to put this off one more week, and I promise you that we will go into it next week. Next week, we will also, hopefully, delve into the review of The Botany of Desire, the interesting book that talks a bit about genetic engineering in one chapter of interest to me. Dr. Whitney Lehman will return to our program to discuss genetic engineering, in this case, particularly of the U.S. potato crop. We're also going to talk about Iraq, or as it was once known, Mesopotamia. It was also known as Sumeria, Babylonia, Chaldea, and a host of other names. We're going to get someone to talk about the history of this very interesting cradle of civilization, which I think is pretty much unknown to most.
Soon to be the 51st
Americans.
State.
That's what some people are saying. All right, Steve, here's a story I think we should talk about. I saved this one for a month. Crash tests may make SUVs even more deadly. This came out of USA Today. To get good grades, SUV and pickup makers have built front ends so stiff that they can batter smaller cars to bits. In a Trailblazer versus Accord test, for example, the Honda's crash test dummy showed a nearly 100% chance of death. Now, since I drive a Honda Accord, I find this to be rather disturbing news. Now, I'm looking at the picture here of the Trailblazer after the crash and the Accord after the crash. The Trailblazer sustains, you know, a fair amount of damage, whereas the Accord looks like a crushed beer can. It's just like completely smashed up to bits. All right, let's shift gears rather dramatically here to do some science. We got to do a little bit of science today. This program is airing on the vernal equinox. It is now the first day of spring. The days have actually days equaled nights on the 17th. The sun actually bends a bit around the horizon. So as of March 17th, day has equaled night. It is now more day than night and will continue to be so until about 24th or so of September. So those of you who are looking forward to more fun in the sun, well, this is the time of year. All right, bit of trivia question, Steve. I don't know whether you know the answer, but how many objects in the solar system are visible to the naked eye?
There are 9 planets, correct?
True.
So I'm assuming that those would be all that you could technically see if you had a telescope.
No, naked eye.
Naked eye?
Known to the ancients. The sun, the moon, and 5 more. The planets.
Mercury through Jupiter or Saturn.
Yeah, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. So you think of 7 objects, you astrologers out there moving around the heavens. As it turns out, there are actually 2 more that are visible to the naked eye. The planet Uranus is just barely visible to the naked eye when it reaches opposition. And if you get out a chart, when it does that every year, you can get a pair of binoculars, find it, and then afterwards it's pretty easy to find with the naked eye. It was not noticed in the ancient peoples because it's just barely visible. I mean, it's very dim. But interestingly, there is one more.
Neptune?
Nope, Neptune is never visible to the naked eye. It never gets above like 8th magnitude, I think. It's just too dim.
So an individual body, a celestial body.
Yes, there's one more. I'll give you a hint. It's an asteroid. And it's not the largest asteroid,
but
Ceres.
It's not one of the asteroids that's orbiting...
out between Mars and Jupiter, yes.
Okay. I can't think of the name offhand.
Well, it's a great little bit of trivia. Its name is Vesta. It was the 4th one discovered.
Oh, Vesta. My friend drives a Vesta, actually. I don't know how...
Vesta reaches opposition next week on March 26th. I would refer you to the web or Astronomy or Sky and Telescope magazine for a chart. If you go out and find Virgo. And those of you who are in the know your stars, can do that. These maps will enable you to go out and locate it. It's kind of cool to do it because Vesta apparently is very bright. Bright as chalk, they say. And so even though it's only the fourth largest asteroid, it's only something like 330 miles across, and it's way past Mars out there orbiting the sun, it is nevertheless visible. Interestingly, too, we have a chunk of Vesta here on Earth. We've been able to measure the spectrum. We know what it's, it looks like in various wavelengths, and there's at least one meteorite here on Earth that we've identified with the fingerprint of having the same spectrum of Vesta. So a chunk of that body has apparently made it here to Earth.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it came from Vesta, because Vesta was probably is part of several other bodies with the same...
Well, that's a very good point. Vesta itself could have once been part of a larger body of which this asteroid came. That's quite possible. But nevertheless, it's the same family, and it adds we have chunks of the moon that have fallen here to Earth that we've been able to relate back spectrographically to the
moon. How does it happen that a chunk of a planet falls on our planet?
Well, if a big old asteroid or meteorite, hits hard enough, say, on Mars, and this has happened, and knocks a big chunk of it off, and it orbits out, and, eventually, this bit of debris can find its way to Earth. That controversial meteorite, which some believe may contain microfossils, it's very, very controversial, and the evidence seems to be going against it at this point, is clearly from Mars, because they've been able to match within this little rock, little bits of gas, have actually been matched to the Martian atmosphere that we've measured from probes on Mars. So it's a really, it's pretty good science. Well, shifting gears again rather dramatically, it's Oscar time. This coming weekend, the Motion Picture Academy will do its usual self-aggrandizing extravaganza and hand out these gold statues to various deserving and, perhaps undeserving individuals. Joining us to discuss this is Capital Public Radio's Gary Chu. Gary has done numerous movie reviews. You probably have heard him. And this is a subject which is near and dear to his heart. Well, Gary, it's Oscar time. And I know you're going to have some things to say on that subject.
Oh, sure. You bet.
Do you have anything to say about the Best Picture, which seems to captivate America's interest every year?
Well, people have, everybody's a moviegoer just about, and they all have their own opinion, and everybody's an expert about movies, and they're all usually based on their own tastes. And I, even though I've done film reviews on TV and radio for off and on through the years, and even, gee whiz, I even have a degree in film, and I want you to be, be mildly...
I didn't know that.
...struck by that,
I did not know that.
I really think a movie that's getting short shrift that's sort of in contention is The Quiet American, which
yes.
The only reason it's in contention is because Michael Caine does an absolutely marvelous job in the lead as the English correspondent in Vietnam, or what would become Vietnam. Of course, the story takes place in the early 50s. The film was made earlier, I think, in about 1958. By Hollywood, and interestingly enough, Audie Murphy played the quiet American in the first movie, who was a great American hero in World War II. Great guy, not too good an actor, but they had that movie kind of wrong the first time. They had it that the American was the good guy, and the English correspondent that Michael Caine plays in the film and is up for an Academy Award for as a lead actor, he was sort of the agnostic, atheistic, nihilistic bad guy in the movie, where in fact he is the good guy, and the reason they didn't release the movie when it was first made back in 2001 was because they actually showed it on a premiere in Manhattan on September 10th, 2001.
Oh my God!
And so the next day they started changing their mind about it and they backed off on it, and probably rightly so. Anyway, it was ultimately released, but because it paints The Quiet American as the sort of myopic, good-intended guy who comes in and brings America into fighting in the Vietnam War, where everyone's a little bit sanguine about wanting to bring that movie to the fore and putting it in the theaters right now. Although it is in the theater, but it's not doing very well. It's not being pushed by Miramax or particularly hard.
Well, I gather that because Michael Caine is up for an Academy Award and they'd like him to win one, that they are keeping it in theaters. It's currently playing at the Tower in Sacramento.
Yeah, it is. And I highly recommend it for people who like Gray and Green novels. And this time, as I said, they've gotten the movie right as per the novel, because Graham was quite upset, as I understand, when they made the first movie, which had Audie Murphy in it, who I said is a great guy, but he was not the greatest actor. Yeah, Brendan Fraser is the quiet American in this one, and he's really good. So I really recommend this as one of the movies of this year to see.
Well, Gary, I would certainly concur with it, with your choice. We mentioned a few weeks back on this show, after I'd seen it, that I thought it was a marvelous picture with a lot to think about, being that it does show, you know, a well-meaning American sort of making things go wrong in Vietnam, and that there's a lesson in there for us that we shouldn't forget.
You know, Doug, there's one other point that the movie makes, and I'm sure it's in the novel, too, because I read the novel such a long time ago, I've sort of forgotten, but it's a point where in the scene, if you'll remember in the movie, since you've seen it, where the blast occurs in the street in Saigon and the people are killed and Caine is running around, you know, in panic because of these injured people, what finally comes out of that is that once political things happen and a war begins, people have to take a side, whether it's that side or the other side. And you can kind of feel that right now in the country with regard to Iraq and in the world. People are sort of taking sides. And in the next day or two or three or how many before the war begins in Baghdad, there's certain feelings about that. Well, because I have good friends who I disagree with what we're doing now. And they disagree with me. I still respect them, but we're having honest disagreements about it. So I think this movie is germane to that as well as the historical lesson that we didn't learn in Vietnam.
Well, let's see what happens to Michael Caine. I'd like to see him win an Oscar for what's a very strong performance in a very provocative and, you know, thought-provoking movie.
Me too.
Well, Gary, come again sometime.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I enjoyed talking with you.
Well, thanks very much. Well, we wanted to have someone actually attend the Oscars for us, and of course we have a Hollywood correspondent, and we're going to go to him now to see. There's been a bit of a problem, though, I understand. David, are you there?
I'm here, Doug, and I'm really a little bit upset, if I may say.
Now, what's the deal? You were going to attend the Oscars, and something's come up.
Well, they're not letting me in this year, Doug. That's the bottom line.
Why is that?
Well, in a word, security.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, they're afraid that they just don't want me to be there. They're afraid that I'm going to do or say something. You know, they're saying security, but I know what the real reason is. It's that Travolta. You know, he's upset. He's still upset at the PR campaign I did.
Oh, he's blacklisted you.
He's blacklisted me, Doug. Travolta's blacklisted me because of the PR campaign I did for his movie, you know, that wonderful film.
Yeah, and I understand you actually ran the public relations campaign for Battlefield Earth.
I led the charge. I was trying to get the word out, the counterspin, that it was not, in fact, a terrible, horrible, unwatchable movie.
You know, it's been labeled, I think, the worst movie ever made.
I did not hear that, but I certainly can understand where people might hear that from someone. But, you know, the thing is, I worked my butt off to try and get the word out on that movie, and Travolta doesn't appreciate it.
It actually cleaned up, though, at the Razzies.
Oh, that's true. You know, actually, I believe, if I remember correctly, that there were several Razzies that were won by Battlefield Earth, which at first I thought was a great thing until I realized that the Razzies were actually for the worst movies of the year.
Well,
and then I was pretty upset.
David, so. Could you maybe, if you can't get into the Oscars, could you go to the Four Point Sheraton in Santa Monica and maybe attend the Razzies for us on Saturday?
I indeed intend to. Yes, I'm going to be going.
Oh, good. I'm fascinated by the fact that that Mr. and Mrs. Madonna have been both nominated for Swept Away.
That's right. I mean, I say I love that movie. In fact, I was swept away by it. I hate to use a pun, but I was. It was a fabulous movie, in my opinion. But hey, if they think it's terrible, you know.
You know, well, the Oscars, they could. I mean, the Oscars don't have categories like worst screen couple and worst remake or sequel, and I think that's something you can find at the Razzies.
So well, that's true. In fact, they also don't have the new category this year that they have, this most flatulent teen-targeted movie.
Uh-huh.
The Oscars don't even come come close to a category like that, which makes the Razzies kind of an interesting, you know.
Please do us the favor, see if you can't attend, and then let us know whether Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman can nail the worst screen couple.
Oh, come on, we know that they're going to win. You know, it's a shoo-in. But what I find interesting is the fact that Christopher Walken, what an amazing guy. Uh-huh. Here he is nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, uh-huh. you know, for Catch Me If You Can.
Uh-huh.
And yet he's also nominated for a Razzie for Worst Supporting Actor for The Country Bears, you know? I mean, I didn't even know he was in that.
That does speak to his versatility.
Oh, his range is incredible. Everywhere from terrible to wonderful. I mean, how does the guy do it? How does he go back? I don't know how he does it.
Can you come on next week and give us a report?
I will give you a wrap-up next week, complete report. All and right. May I say, it's an honor to be attending the Razzies. I'm so proud to be, you know, and I mean, the fact that...
Yeah, well, David, first attend and then give your speech.
But and I'm just hoping Benigni wins something for Pinocchio. He has 6 nominations, but I want to see him walk over everyone's heads again like he did a few years ago. That was great when he won. Remember?
I don't.
Of course, I don't think he's coming, but...
It's always a pleasure, David. We'll talk to you again next week about the Razzies.
Okay. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Always good having David on the show. I think that about wraps it up for today's program. Thanks for coming, Steve.
It's been great to be on here, Doug, today. Really appreciate it.
Hey, finals. You guys are in finals right now, aren't you?
Yeah, actually we are. I took some vital time out of studying to join you here on the program today.
We're glad that you did. Hopefully it will not impact your grade point average.
Not too bad, I don't think.
All right, well, actually we should wish all the students out there luck on their finals this week.
I would like to wish everyone the best of luck, except in the classes where they are curving that I'm in. So
good point. All right. Well, you've been listening to Radio Parallax. Once again, we have quite a bit on tap for next week's program, Thursday at 5 o'clock. We hope that you will tune in again then. I am your host, Douglas Everett. We've been assisted today by my sound engineer, Mr. Edward McMillan, and hope you will stay and listen to Todd Urich for his Hometown Atrocities to follow on this very same station.